It's Ireland's most talked about podcast. The only podcast with live callers and live debates. It's Opinions Matter with Adrian and Jeremy.
You're very welcome to this special episode of Opinions Matter with Adrian and Jeremy, recorded at our studio at the White Sands Hotel in Portmarnock in North County Dublin. If this is your very first time hearing our podcast, you're very welcome. This is episode number 1,354, which means there are 1,353 other episodes for you to go and find and listen to, and we actively encourage you to do so.
Oh, could you be arsed?
Yes, absolutely. The more they listen, the better for us.
Oh, the more money we get. Yes, sir, I have three college kids. Kids to put through college.
What, at six? You're putting them through college at six?
Very intelligent kids. No, there is a back catalogue there, as my learned friend said. Back catalogue, it's like the Beatles.
Well, there's a lot more than the Beatles. The Beatles didn't even have 1,353 songs.
Yes, but the difference is their back catalogue was all hits. Some of those topics are very ropey. There's a couple of Yellow Submarines in there, isn't there?
Way to sell the podcast.
No, there's a couple of Yellow Submarines in there. Come on, let's be... Oh, look, there's an I Am with the Walrus. Look, there it is. No, 80... I would say my guesstimate would be 80% of the back catalogue of Opinions Matter...
is good.
...is bad.
Oh.
No, good. Good, I mean good.
It's good, yeah.
It is, it's there too.
Anyway, welcome to this special episode of the podcast. On this episode, we're going to be speaking to a man who was reacting to our previous episode, yesterday's episode, which was called I Don't Want My Kids Learning About LGBT in School, Ban It. And this man is a man called Michael, who contacted us because... Michael has a very unusual story. Isn't that the best way to describe it? It's an unusual story.
I had to Google. So when he contacted us yesterday after the previous podcast, he said, I want to talk about being a detransitioner. And as I was talking to him, I'm Googling it here and going, what's a detransitioner? I never heard of that word before. It's someone who transitions, but not fully transitions, and then decides to go back to the gender that they were beforehand. So we've obviously spoken to trans people on the show before. And I mean, I'll say this when we're talking to Michael as well. One of the things I never get is the hatred that people have towards the trans community. And people who are anti-trans, I don't get it, because who cares how someone lives their life? I mean, do you ever see the abuse that, you know, the actor that was Ellen Page? Do you remember her? And then she transitioned and she became Elliot Page. And if you see photographs, now, you know, he looks, and people go, it's a he. He always looks happy. And he said, because I've read a lot of his interviews that he said he's more happier now than ever before. Mm. He was never happy in a female body. And since he transitioned, he is happier than ever before. And surely, in this world, that's all that matters.
And this is one of the arguments that I've had on this podcast before, that all we aspire for our kids, for ourselves, is to have a life filled with happiness.
And that's not me saying I agree with trans, okay? That but I don't know what it's like to feel that I'm trapped in the wrong body. I don't know what that feels like. I'm lucky enough that I was born in the body that I know I was meant for. Well, not this body, maybe a bit better.
Seriously.
Okay, see, but there's nothing I can do about it. But most of us listening to this are born in the body that we know we belong in. And that's a great feeling. But imagine having that other feeling, like Ellen Page, where every day, as soon as she realised that, she was going, I should be the other gender. And that's why I don't get the hate. Because literally, Ellen, who is now Elliot, has done nobody any harm.
No, that's our thing. You do you. As long as you're happy, that's all I want for you. But we're going to be talking to a man in just a moment who wasn't happy. And he
did
was,
you just misgender?
No, because he's a he. He is a he.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay.
He's detransitioning, so he's a he again.
But wasn't always a he.
No, became a she for a while.
So he went from he, she to he.
Yeah, correct.
It's like a Michael Jackson song. He, she, he.
Anyway, the point is, this is a story you will never have heard before. It's a story of a guy who was very unhappy, went through trauma in his life, decided to change sex and went through a whole process for months on, years on end, and then said, oh, fuck, this isn't what I want. It's an amazing story, actually.
Lads, I actually have about 10 questions that I want to ask him because... We obviously knew we were going to be talking to him, and I was sitting down yesterday evening going, I want to ask him that. Because I've always wanted, it's something you I've always wanted to ask as someone who's been in that position. And for those of you listening to it, listen to it with an open mind and an open heart. But there's a couple of things I think that we're going to be shocked.
Yeah, no, definitely. Absolutely, 100%.
Because the feeling, now we obviously spoke to him briefly on the phone before before getting him on the podcast. And there was a couple of things he said that the trans community will not be happy with. Would you agree?
Absolutely, 100%. We will be talking to Michael in just one moment.
Opinions Matter. Opinions Matter with Adrian Kennedy and Jeremy Dixon. A daily podcast from Ireland about opinions.
Looking to transform your home without breaking the bank? Visit Carpet Luxury Bedding and Furniture, Dublin's trusted family business with over 50 years of experience. Take advantage of their famous stairs and landing package deal. Just €500 supplied and fitted, including up to 16 square yards of quality carpet. Plus, discover fantastic deals on stylish laminate flooring, durable vinyl flooring, beds, mattresses, and furniture for every room. With free measuring and sample services, finding your perfect floor has never been easier. Visit Carpet Luxury Bedding and Furniture today or shop online at carpetluxurybeddingandfurniture.com. Quality, value and service you can trust.
So Michael, you were listening to a previous episode of Opinions Matter where we spoke about schools, and in Italy they were removing LGBTQ lessons for secondary school students, and it got into a big debate about whether or not children need to learn about trans issues, whether they need to learn that trans people even exist. And people got very hot and bothered about it. In fact, we often say, Adrian, don't we, that one of the most contentious topics we ever do is about trans. Mm. And
for some reason, people seem to get terribly triggered by it.
And my argument has always been, and I'll put this to you, or put this to Michael in a second, has always been, I believe, okay, whatever you want to be, if you believe that you were born in the wrong body, you do you. And if you were an adult, you are quite entitled to do whatever you want with your body. And I don't think trans people hurt other people. They just get on with their lives. And I've never understood the level of vitriol of you, Adrian.
No, not really, no. And like I said, it is something that triggers people. It's one of the rare things that we actually agree on. Where it comes to somebody being trans, my attitude is, you do you, as long as it makes you happy. That's all we ask for in life, is happiness.
Then there are people who believe, and that's why it's going to be interesting talking to you, Michael, there are people who believe that a lot of people who do transition, they make rash decisions and they end up regretting it in later life. And there was people producing all sorts of stats on the last podcast we did saying, oh, X amount of people who have transitioned end up having suicidal thoughts. And then you came out of the woodwork because you are a, what's called, and I never heard this word before, Adrian, did you know what a detransitioner was?
No, I do now, but I had never heard the expression.
Heard it either,
Michael, welcome to Opinions Matter.
Thank you so much for having me.
Michael, take me back to the start of your story when you obviously started to feel you were a little bit different.
Yes. So my story starts when I was 18 years of age. In a nightclub in Glasgow, I was raped, unfortunately. It then pushed me down a path of self-destruction. So I got involved in alcohol, drugs. I got involved in the party scene in Glasgow. So I was spiraling out of control, basically. And I ended up falling into a crowd of people who also had traumas of their own. So we were kind of trauma bonded. Who then introduced me to what trans was. And obviously when you go through something like I did, you become attached with your body, with your actual physical body. You become attached to it. It's disgusting. You hate it, you know. So this was an answer to why I felt the way I felt. And instead of equating the issues that I had to trauma, I equated the issues that I had to the fact that I had a trans identity.
Okay, so sorry to cut across you. On the back of being raped when you were a young man, you started to develop these feelings of hatred, I suppose, towards your own body. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Up until then, and that is horrific, what happened to you. But by the way, as a side note, because I think it's important to ask, was the person who did that ever brought to justice, or what happened about that?
Not for my case, no. For other ones that he done after me, yes, but not for mine.
Oh, he was a serial rapist, was he?
Yes.
Oh my God. So he was brought to justice anyway. That's some positive news out of that story. Up until that point that happened, when you were because they say that, well, it's different for different people, but they say that a lot of people by the age of 12 or 13 start to discover their sexuality and they know, oh, I'm attracted to women or I'm attracted to men or, mm-hmm. or oh God, I might be born in the wrong body. I feel like I'm a woman, but I'm born in a man's body. Did you have any of those feelings up until that point? Did you have any feelings of sexuality? Did you even... Obviously, by 18, you knew what trans was, but did you know what trans meant back when you were younger than that?
No, I didn't. I mean, the most that I knew about was, you know, drag queens when you seen like Lily Savage and Dame Edna, you know, on the TVs at Christmas time, you know, and then the Christmas pantomime dames, you know, that's the most I knew. But it was always explained that it's just a man in a dress, you know, an extravagant version of a man in a dress. But I think with sexuality, it's kind of different. So your sexuality to me is formed during the puberty stages. So I actually came out in school when I was about 15, coming on 16, that I was gay. So sexuality is completely separate to gender identity. However, you know, like it's a completely separate entity. Throughout high school, you know, right up until the ages of 18, I had no feelings of a kind of trans identity. You know, I had no feelings of I'm trans, none.
Okay, so going back to what I was saying a moment ago, after this rape incident, which is obviously trauma that nobody should ever have to go through, but trauma that you did go through, you got to the stage that you hated your own body. You hated the look of it. You hated what it stood for. So at what point then did you start thinking, or was it suggested to you or whatever, that you don't have to remain in that body?
Yeah, so it would have been when I was 25. So it was a suggestion made by, obviously, the trauma group that I was bonded with. And they had said, oh, maybe you're feeling like this because you're trans, you know, and then they explained what trans was. And in my head, I just thought, this is the answer. This is what I need. This is how I can change who I am.
Sorry for cutting across. Was this brought up? You mm-hmm. obviously because you had something so traumatic happen to you, you obviously went for counselling afterwards.
Well, I never had counselling.
Oh, you didn't have counselling at all?
No, I didn't have any form of counselling. And it wasn't a professional that suggested it. It was my friendship group at the time that suggested it. So I went to my doctor at 25 and just said, I feel like a woman. And my doctor instantly put a referral over to in Glasgow. I had a 2-year waiting period at the time. That time the waiting list was a lot less. And it was a 2-year wait that I had. I would phone and tell them if they didn't give me access to these, you know, the drugs that I needed, I was going to kill myself. And done nothing. They actually sent an internal email to say that if I continued to call them, that they would have me charged with harassment from the police. They didn't do any duty of care. They didn't, you know, send a welfare check from the police that they were supposed to, nothing. They just threatened to have me charged and arrested.
So you were with this trauma group, this group that you bonded with. Somebody suggests mm-hmm. that maybe you're in the wrong body, and you, in your head at that time, thought, this is it. This is the answer. This is the solution. This will make me feel better about myself. But you'd never had any sort of trans thoughts up to that point. Is that right?
Yes.
And in fact, by your own admission, what year was this, by the way?
So this was 2018.
Okay, so I mean, the trans movement was in full swing at that stage. I mean, it wasn't as if it was back in the 80s when people didn't know what trans was. Everybody knew what trans was at that stage. It seems a bizarre thing to suggest to you, especially given that you were in such a vulnerable position. Wasn't the agent at the time, like you were after going through this traumatic, one of the most traumatic things you can go through in your life, and then to have that put in your head. And I guess from talking to you, it seems that once that was in your head, it didn't leave your head. It kept playing around in your head.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is the thing. When someone's in trauma, they look for answers. And if they see a plausible solution to an answer that they've got, they take that plausible solution. You know, and the group that I was with was also traumatized. They had their own traumas. And that's exactly what they done. You know, some of them were trans, some of them were transvestites, some of them were gay, lesbians. So they seeked answers that were the easiest solution. And that, unfortunately, was an answer that was an easy solution. So the reason that I hate my body isn't because it was violated. it was because I'm just trans. So if I medicate myself, if I take these steps to, you know, medicalize, then it will fix the trauma that I've got. It will fix the feelings that I have. So, you know, when, especially when you're involved in drugs and alcohol, as bad as I was, you don't have the capacity to think clearly.
You started on the road towards transitioning. Take me through that whole process. Take me through what it is like in terms of the medication that you have to take, the impact that that medication has on you.
So after the 2-year waiting period, I had my first appointment with in April of 2020. I had two 30 to 45 minute appointments with two separate psychiatrists. Them appointments were fact-finding and history gathering. So they went through the history, you know, how were you at puberty? What was your family dynamic like? You know, when did you start feeling like this? They even asked, do you get any sexual kinks from dressing up like this? You know, they kind of went into somewhat of a detailed history. But it was only two, as I said, 30 to 45 minute appointments. And then after the second appointment, I was medicated. So my first appointment, the suggestion from that was that I get therapy. My second appointment, the doctor overrode that suggestion and then medicated me. So by November of 2020, I was on a medication. So I was on an androgen blocker, which it blocks testosterone, and estrogen, obviously synthetic estrogen, which enhances the estrogen levels within a male body. Cross-sex hormones, we call it. So starting on cross-sex hormones, everything changed. So my full body changed. I went from being 8.5 stone to being 15.5 stone at my heaviest. And that was within 1 year. I got issues with my bones. My body temperature would rocket up and then drop back down. I started to develop gynecomastia. For anyone that's listening that doesn't know what gynecomastia is, it's extra breast tissue on a male's body. So I started developing gynecomastia. This went on for about 5 years. You know, I was 5 years medicated, or just short of 5 years medicated. So I had a slew of problems throughout the time of being on estrogen that would rear itself up.
I'm sorry, sorry for going across you, Michael. Well, while all this was going on, and it's interesting, it's fascinating actually getting an insight into how long it actually takes to transition without the surgical process, that it was literally just from drugs you were taking. At the time where this was going on and your body was changing and you were growing breasts, you were becoming more female, did anybody in your life comment on that at the time, or did anybody in your life, family members, friends, relations, work colleagues, did anybody discuss it with you, talk to you about what you were going through, ask you if you were okay, anything like that?
Yes. So I had a couple of work colleagues at the time that asked if I was making the correct decision. And my family also. So my family didn't take an affirmational approach. So, you know, I was still their son. I was still Michael. They still use the correct pronouns. They were very much, you're an adult, you live your life as you would, just like the two of yous do. But they didn't affirm. So that actually helped in the long run, because obviously I've been detransitioning. So there was a couple of people that asked them questions, but what you need to remember is within the first year or so of taking cross-sex hormones, you go through a euphoric stage. So it's called gender euphoria. It's an extreme high that you've finally got access to the medication that you think is going to treat the symptoms that you've got. So for the first year, it was all rose gardens and light and love. You know, it was exactly what I wanted, and I was so happy, and, you know, no one could tell me any different. So even when they were challenging me, I was kind of clouded by happiness at this point. So their challenge was just them asking regular questions. It wasn't actually provoking any way of me thinking, is this actually the right decision?
Okay, so for the first period of time, you, in your heart and soul, felt you'd made the right decision. You were very happy with the direction you were going in. You were very happy that you were taking the medication. So take me to the point then that you realized, shit, this is not what I want.
Mm-hmm. I just want to point out, we need to not mistake what true happiness is to what a false sense of happiness is.
Yes, no, I was kind of implying that you had a feeling of happiness, but in hindsight, you realised it actually wasn't.
Yes, yeah. So I had doubts throughout my full transition after the first year. Any time that I changed clothes and I seen my body, it would make me feel uncomfortable. I felt like I was kind of a half human. I was in a state of disrepair. There was something wrong with me. I would bring these doubts up to the doctors at the clinic, and I would say to them, you know, I don't feel comfortable. You know, when I look at myself, I feel very, very uneasy. They would just correlate it to, well, this is the normal feeling. This is what every trans person feels. It's because the medication is still working. It's because you've had no surgeries, but you're going to feel like this. Just continue down the path, and once you get your surgery, you'll feel a lot better. But the doubts were there throughout, after the first year, throughout it. You know, there were not a day that I didn't have doubt.
Okay, and during that period, you said at the very start of the process, counselling was suggested, but never actually happened. Did you at all, during the first year or two, have any form of counselling to reassure yourself that you were on the right path?
No, there was no counselling whatsoever.
As you were transitioning and becoming more female, you obviously went by the female name, which was what?
Caitlin Louise.
And at that stage, you were, would I be right in saying you were identifying as a woman? Were you dressing as a woman as well? Wearing women's clothes?
For all intents and purposes.
Okay, so you'd completely given over your body to this, that you were now female. One of the big questions that people always ask, and in fact messages coming in about, is one of the questions that people seem to have the big issue about, is whether or not people who are transitioning use male or female bathrooms. Now, obviously, for all intents and purposes, you still had all the male genitalia, because you hadn't gone for surgical operations. Did you use a female or a male toilet, if you don't mind me asking?
No, that's fine. For the first 2 years of my transition, I used female spaces. So my medical transition, I should point out. So my first 2 years of medical transition, I used female spaces. The way that it structures is that you assimilate into society and get affirmation from society. So part of that would be then to change the space that they use. This is why I say an affirmational approach doesn't work, because it impedes on the rights of other people. So I used female spaces, full disclosure, for the first 2 years. It was actually after having some conversations with family members about what space that I used that made me actually sit up and realise I'm making people feel uncomfortable, even though people don't want to tell me they feel uncomfortable. I'm making people feel uncomfortable, and I stopped using the spaces after the first 2 years.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
For the last three, I used males.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that, because that is a big problem. And it's a general fear that people have, and it's a fear that won't go away. You know what I mean? Women don't want men who identify as women using the same toilets as them. And it's interesting hearing it from a person who was transitioning, Adrian, that they actually gave some thought to other people.
And so it was using those spaces that made you start to feel uncomfortable, because you were making others feel uncomfortable.
Yes, in a sense, yes. I think it was less to do with what I felt like and more to do with what other people felt like. You know, especially because living in a society, we have to have an element of where we think about other people that we live, like, you know, that we interact with daily. And if I'm in a confined space, like a toilet, and there is a woman who feels uncomfortable, they're less likely to speak up, you know, especially to a male. In fact, they're probably unlikely to speak up, not less likely, but unlikely to speak up. So when it was brought to my attention that actually even my own family members, even though they know who I am, they know that I am no risk, you know, my attraction is males and not females, that they would feel uncomfortable with it, that's what piqued me. And that's when I realised, well, I need to make the decision to use a separate space and not go into these female-only spaces. I never used female changing rooms. It was toilets that I used.
Okay, so take me then to the point in your life when that very, very, very large penny finally dropped and you thought to yourself, shit, this is not what I should be doing. This is not the direction I should be going in. I actually do not want to transition. I actually do not want to be a woman. When did that happen to you?
May 2025, so last year, I was on social medias and I started hearing talks about detransitioners. Just like you, I had never heard what a detransitioner was. The NHS or no health body that you're under will ever tell you that detransitioners exist. So when I started actually hearing detransitioner stories on social media, their stories aligned more with what my story was at this point, where I felt uncomfortable. There was this nagging doubt in my head. So I ended up speaking to one of the detransitioners personally, off social media, who, you know, just gave me a story and said, this is how I felt. But he had actually had penile inversion surgery. So he would speak about how when he had the surgery, the day he woke up from having the surgery, you know, it was instant regret that he had. And there was one thing that he said to me, and he said, it's easy to live with regrets. It's easy to live with doubts, but it's hard to live with regret. And that stuck with me. And it was from that moment then that I was like, right, I can't go forward with this surgery, because I was on the list to have penile inversion surgery. And I can't go ahead with this surgery with having these regrets. You know, if I go through with this surgery, have these regrets, I'm never going to live with doubt. I'll just kill myself. So I had to put the stop on it then. So
let me just try and understand then. You were at a point that the next stage in this process was surgery. And the surgery, yeah, as you have described, it's fairly radical surgery. It's irreversible surgery. But you had reached that crossroads where you had to decide, am I going for this or am I backing out? And was it a fear of that surgery, or was that surgery being in your immediate future what made you realise, my God, this really isn't what I want to do?
Listening to detransitioner stories, how I could relate to a detransitioner story more than I can relate to someone who went through and had an actual, you know, trans surgery. It was the doubts were so overwhelming at this point that I couldn't just listen to the doctors and suck it up and kind of move forward with these stuff. And as you said, that the surgeries are reversible. I had done research into the surgery. There's no way to uninvert a penis. Like, you know, medical science hasn't come that far. There's no way to actually reverse penile surgery. So I had to make the decision, am I going to go forward or am I not going to go forward? And I didn't go forward, and I've never been happier.
So you're now in a phase where you are detransitioning, and that is basically trying to reverse all that you've done to your body over the last 6 years, with medication, with hormones and so on. So what is that? What does that process involve? And will you be able to fully reverse everything that you did?
So there is no process. The UK doesn't have a detransition pathway. So when I presented to Sandifer Gender Clinic and I told them that I was detransitioning, I didn't get any answers. They didn't know how to detransition me. They didn't know how to stop the medication. They didn't know if I was to be weaned off or if I wasn't to be weaned off. They don't know if I'm infertile by taking this medication because it causes infertility. They didn't know anything. So I went from being an experiment, from transitioning to being an experiment and detransitioning. And the issues that I got from taking the medication got worse. So I then ended up getting diagnosed with chronic pain fatigue. You know, I've got hyperextension in my knees. You know, I take water retention in my feet. So my feet will balloon to colossal sizes and it become very, very painful. And my bones are very brittle. So I'm easier to bruise and break bones now, unfortunately. So none of these side effects are reversible. I've also got extra breast tissue. So what will happen with a gynecomastia is it will shrink, but it will never go away. You'll always end up with extra breast tissue. So I would have to then go forward and get surgery to have that removed to fix that. So taking cross-sex hormones is not reversible in the slightest.
Will you ever get back to what you were, the person you were, the body that you had before you started this journey? Will you ever get back there again?
No. In short, no, there is no way to return to what you were. You mastered your endocrine system, which is a viable system within your body. You know, there is no way of returning. Just like testosterone levels might return, but they might never return to a normal level of testosterone in a male body. So I might always have to be on testosterone to make sure that my levels are high enough. There is no get out of jail card. There is no, let me just stop this and I'll just go back to normal. There is none of that. Like, it's irreversible.
So will you ultimately end up spending the rest of your life as a sort of an androgynous being?
In a sense, yeah. So, like, you know, I've for appearance purposes, I look male. Like, there is no appearance that anybody else would be deluded to think that I was the opposite sex. I look male. Even when I was on cross-sex hormones, you can still tell someone is male. But internally, like, there is no way of returning medically back to normal. You know, all of these issues are just going to get worse. Brittle bones are just going to get worse as I get older. You know, hyperextension is just getting worse as I get older. It might come to a point when I actually end up in a wheelchair because of taking this medication before the likelihood of you would have actually ended up in a wheelchair because of old age. You know, it's dangerous footing that we're doing in the world at the moment. Medicalizing human beings for a sense of gender identity is very dangerous.
Can I read between the lines again and sense a bit of anger in you? You feel angry that you were allowed to even start this journey without any proper counselling, any proper advice?
Absolutely. You don't need to read between the lines for that one. I am angry. I'm angry that the health professionals that have a duty of care didn't step up and say, no, you're too vulnerable. You need to go and get counselling for, you know, the rape. You need to go and get alcohol counselling. You need to go and get drug abuse counselling. I'm angry at them. I'm also angry at them for the fact that they lied to me for 5 years and said that the doubts that I had were normal and didn't question them doubts. So, yeah, I'm pretty angry.
Okay, so a young man who was at a very vulnerable point in his life, whose emotions were all over the place, whose mind was a little bit fucked up at the time because of what had happened to you, was allowed to go through the process following a suggestion from somebody, was allowed to go through the whole process without any breaks ever being applied or even any slowdown ever being applied.
Yep. Full process. But so when you look at the pathway in which transition happens in the UK, there is no set guideline. It's a patient by patient basis. So some patients will get sent away from counselling, other patients won't get sent away from counselling. And because of my history of being gay and kind of being gender non-conformative, that then opened the door up for them to say, well, you've experimented with gender in the past, so let me just transition you. So we look at musicians back in the day. So, you know, Boy George, David Bowie, you know, these people were all kind of gender non-conforming. You know, they wore makeup. They wore, you know, certain types of clothing that would be deemed as female attire. If these people were alive and said that they were trans, that would be used as part of their diagnostic because they were so performative in their appearance. That would be used as a diagnostic criteria. So they would then be, well, you don't need therapy because you're just gender non-conforming, so let's transition you. Take a butch lesbian, they would be deemed as someone who's gender non-conforming. You know, they don't adhere to the stereotypes of female in society, so they would just be transitions without any intervention of therapy.
A lot of people, when we talk about trans topics, they will message us on the podcast and they will say trans people are just people with mental health issues and they just need they need the right guidance. What would you say to that? Because we often get offended by that because, as you know, the WHO did say that people who are trans, it's not a mental health issue, that they recognise it, and they will be the foremost of, you know, experts on stuff like this. Mm-hmm. So when people say, you know, all last month during Pride Month, people say, oh, it's mental health month, it's madness month, these people are just crazy, they're just crazy. What do you say to that?
They're true. That is exactly it, though, right? So ask yourself this. We know it's not a neurological condition because we've done brain scans. We know it's not a physical condition because we can't physically see that someone's trans. So if it's not a neurological, it's not a physical, what else is there left? It's mental. if we don't deem it as mental health issues, then we can't treat it. It's the way that it's structured. It's structured through psychotherapy. It's structured through psychology. So it has to be deemed as a mental health issue. It's all in someone's internal sense of self that they've got this gender identity. I'm all for not classifying it as a mental health disorder, because then we don't need to treat it. Then we don't need to medicalize human beings. But that's not what will happen. As a mental health disorder, there is no way to look at it. You can have a mental health disorder and not have a mental health illness. Is the difference.
So okay, but let me ask you then, Michael, do you believe that many people who completely and utterly transition from one gender to another can do that consciously, deliberately, and with great effect for them in that they find happiness in their life? Do you believe that that is possible?
No.
So somebody...
There's two reasons in which people will transition. One will be trauma, and two will be because of a fetish.
Okay, so somebody listening to us right now who is trans, who has literally gone through a full sex change over the last number of years, and as a younger person was, let's say, a man, and is now a woman to all intents and purposes, are you telling me that you don't believe that that individual can or will be happy?
They wouldn't ever be happy, though. They're never going to be fully happy because they aren't actually what they think they are.
But I think, looking at the most famous trans person, Caitlyn Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner in every interview seems to be living the life of Riley, and she seems to be, on the surface anyway, she seems to be very happy. I know people who have interviewed her and who know her quite well and say that to talk to her, she's actually happier. Mm-hmm. And that she was sad when she was
There are others that have interviewed her that will say that person is very fucked up.
Yep. And I'm actually glad that you brought him up. Caitlyn Jenner is actually a man with a fetish. Caitlyn Jenner actually wore his wife and daughter's underwear prior to transitioning. That is fetishism. That person that you're speaking about is just a man that's got a fetish.
Okay, so let me ask you then, for somebody who's listening to us right now, who is thinking about this, who has thought long and hard about, you know, feeling that they're trapped in the wrong body, they might be a young man who thinks, I'd be much happier as a woman. What is your message to that person? Because you're somebody who went almost all the way there and is now in reverse gear. What is your message?
I will never try and convince anyone not to take a path that they chose in life, but I would always implore everybody to look at the research. Do your own research before actually going down a path of medicalization. And also, if you have any pre-existing issues, depression, anxiety, traumas, rapes, alcoholism, deal with that prior to medicalizing yourself. Go and get therapy for that and see if this is still the questions that you've got at the end of it. Because I can probably 9 times out of 10 guarantee you that once you deal with the pre-existing comorbidities, the feelings of gender identity will go away. We can see it in, especially in children, where children who aren't put on puberty blockers are 98% likely to not medicalize. Children who are put on beauty blockers are 90% likely to go on to take cross-sex hormones. Children will tend to grow out of it.
All right. Let me ask you then finally, Michael, you're still a young man. You are detransitioning. You have already said to us that that process will never be fully complete. It can never be fully completed. You will never be back to the young man that you were before you started transitioning. So what does the future hold for you? You're a young gay man who for a period of time tried to become a woman, pulled the brake, started reversing that process as best you can. What does the future hold for you?
Yeah, so I'm actually quite glad you asked that, because I've started an organisation back in April. It's called DTransPathwayUK.com. We assist detransitionist assisters and parents of trans-identified individuals to come to terms with what happens and to help them through the process of detransitioning. You know, you can find us online, you can find us on X, etc. So this is what I do. I've turned my negative experience into something positive by helping other people that might be going through that negative experience. And we even speak to people who are questioned if they have a gender identity or not, and help people, you know, find answers to the questions that they've got without going down the route of medicalisation. We offer them trauma therapies, you know, we offer them therapies away from gender identity as a whole. So that's what my future holds. My future holds is making sure that we don't end up with a demographic of people that are disabled because they've been taking cross-sex hormones.
Okay, the organisation again is called?
DTransPathwayUK.com. DTransPathway.com.
So would you say, just in closing, would you say that transitioning, even though you didn't transition fully, that transitioning was the biggest mistake that you made in your life?
Yes. Well, no one transitions fully because we're gonochoric species. We can't transition. But yes, it was the biggest mistake that I made in my life.
Well, look, Michael, I really appreciate you spending the time to talk to us. It's not very often that you hear an interview or a conversation of any type with somebody like yourself who is detransitioning, trying to go back to where you were before you started taking medication and hormones. But as you said yourself, a process that may never be completed. But I really do appreciate you talking to us on this latest Opinions Matter podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Great to talk to you, Michael. Thanks very much indeed. There you go. What a nice man. Really nice man.
Yeah, that's a sad, sad story, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I know he's in a better place now than he was before. But it's so interesting to hear someone who was trans speaking so negatively about the trans community.
Anyway, thank you for listening to this latest Opinions Matter podcast with Adrian and Jeremy. If you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe or follow. Click on the little bell icon on Spotify, and that way you will be notified each and every day we upload a new podcast, which is most weekday afternoons at around 4-ish and on a Saturday at lunchtime. I'm Adrian, he's Jeremy. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thinking about giving your home a fresh new look? At Carpet Luxury Bedding and Furniture, you'll find quality flooring, beds and furniture at prices you'll love. Customers across Dublin keep coming back for their famous €500 stairs and landing package deal. Up to 16 square yards, supplied and fitted. And if you're considering a bigger makeover, explore their great value laminate flooring and vinyl ranges. Perfect for busy family homes. Friendly service, expert fitting and unbeatable value. That's Carpet Luxury Bedding and Furniture. Visit the showroom or learn more at Carpet Luxury Bedding and Furniture.com.